Welcome, Goombas. I'm here for another recording. I'm here with Matt Burns.
Yes, sir.
He's one of the founding fathers of Four State SlasherCon.
That's accurate, yeah.
Which will be happening in October, Winchester.
Winchester, Virginia, at the Bright Box Theater on October 16th and 17th, Friday and Saturday night.
This is your first year doing Four State?
Yes, I did a small convention last year in Fredericksburg, Virginia called Halloween Fest. Unfortunately, the partner I was with on that, he wound up getting it. Well, it's not unfortunate for him. He got a really good job, so unfortunately, he just didn't have the time to devote to the fest this year. So, you know, retooled, new staff, new look, new town, new everything. So hopefully it brings us some success.
Offhand, do you know who's going to... Could you tell the listeners who might be there and what's going on? And
we got a great guest list. We got three of the people from the movie The Human Centipede, which, you know, was a very controversial movie from a few years ago. We have the three links of the centipede, actually, Ashley C. Williams, Ashlyn Jenny, and Aki. I forget his last name. But yeah, I was gonna say, but yeah, those three are gonna be there. We got a really rare reunion, actually, for the Creepshow 2 movie. We have Dan Kameen, who is Old Chief Woodenhead from the Old Chief Woodenhead segment from Creepshow 2. We have a rare first-time East Coast appearance from The Hitchhiker, Tom Wright. Everybody remembers, thanks for the ride, lady. You know, that he's actually going to be there, one of his first East Coast convention appearances. We also have a first convention appearance ever for this guy, actually, a gentleman by the name of Daniel Beer. Daniel Beer was in the raft segment. He was Randy, the last guy to get pulled in or whatever by the monster from the raft. He was also in a very popular movie from the early 90s called Point Break with Keanu Reeves in it. And he was also in a great B-movie called Hell High, which I really love that movie. It's more of a B-horror flick, but it was cool stuff. For you Evil Dead fans, you know, we got Danny Hicks from Evil Dead 2, who was Jake, the crazy guy from Evil Dead 2, and Timothy Quill, big guy, great guy, is bringing a lot of Evil Dead memorabilia and merchandise from that movie, so be on the lookout for Tim. He'll tell you stories, great, great guy. He was in Army of Darkness as the blacksmith. We got much more if you want me to keep going.
I know you have at least two bands.
Oh, we have four bands a night, actually. We have the headliner of Saturday night, of course, was Michael Graves from the Misfits. He was the one that took over Danzig's spot in the late 90s when the Misfits decided to come back on Roadrunner Records. You know, a lot of people, I love those albums. A lot of people, you know, I mean, a lot of people naysayed them at the time, but I think people are starting to come around and see that they're really cool. And Friday night, we got a special treat for you guys. We have G. Tom Mack, who was the writer of Cry Little Sister from The Lost Boys. He actually wrote that song, which was the main song in the movie. And also, Jonathan Tiersten from the movie Sleepaway Camp. He was the cousin, Kevin, I believe was his name. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was in a lot of the Sleepaway Camp movies. And he's going to be playing his acoustic music, which is really great, actually. He's a very talented musician. You don't want to miss that.
And I know at one point you guys were having, like, the Doctor Who TARDIS and
that wound up getting canceled, unfortunately, due to scheduling confusion. But the good part is for you ladies in the house who love horror and whatnot, we got a great thing going on called the Miss Slasher Sweetheart Pageant. I mean, it's not a real pageant. I mean, don't think that everybody's going to be stuck up and snooty. It's not that way at all. It's just fun.
One of those fun.
It's fun. Everybody gets dressed up in the crazy makeup and the crazy dresses and whatnot and has a good old time. It's presented by Dead Dollies Magazine. James and the crew have been really cool to us. So make sure you sign up for that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I know. I'll probably do a correlation event with the show somehow. We'll be down there. Either a man on the street, you know, type of deal with you guys.
Oh, absolutely.
So like I said, we'll be down there, you know, saying we're at the show, we're downtown Winchester, so helping promote you guys down there and recording down there. It sounds like it's going to be a great event. We do wish you the best of luck in regards to that. I'll say this, you guys are doing more of a promotion and more getting your name out to kind of go on a little bit of a rant. The mall's doing an event on early November. Their pop, putting in quotes here, their pop culture event.
Oh, that Wonder Expo? Yeah. I remember hearing about that last year. No offense to the Martinsburg Mall or their efforts, but I know it didn't do as well as they'd liked from what I remember.
And they're trying to do it again this year, and it's one of those things that they're putting more effort in their home show and letting people know about that than this. It's honestly, if I didn't walk through the mall to use the restroom, I wouldn't have known it was happening at all.
Oh, absolutely. Promotion is key. Promotion is key. Absolutely.
I've told them last year that the Scotch tape is cheap, real cheap. It's like a dollar.
Yeah, you can get it at any dollar store. You know,
they could have put up like a sign, taped up flyer at each door, especially the Walmart side.
And FYE. I mean, FYE is a big, FYE and See the Source are both big, big.
I'll be talking
for places like that.
I put a word in with them this year to get information, to see what the deal is. I've been hearing reports to set up there. It's $300 just to set up and sell your wares.
Our vendor tables, when we had them, were sold out now. Were $60 for both days.
So you kind of see the listeners, you kind of see the aspect of this, that it's discouraging to a lot of, granted you're renting a spot for state. A lot like most cons, this is a little bit behind the scenes. Most cons or most shows, when they do, they rent a hall or building or convention hall, and they have, in order to recoup some of their loss, so to speak, they have to rent out spots to the vendors. The mall does not have to do that. It's their own space, and they're charging $300 like they're a very large show. And
last year, I think it had like four tables. No offense, it wasn't very big. I remember, and it was sad because these free Comic-Con things have mad potential. Like I went to one in Hagerstown, and I bet there was 1,000 people there a couple months back. I mean, Cindy Powell, who did that show, did a fantastic job with it. My guys from the local horror company, Creepy Crawl Productions. My friend Becky Chambers, who's actually going to be vending at Four State SlasherCon, she cleaned up, made bank at this little Comic-Con. And I mean, it was a great day for families to get out and enjoy comic books, enjoy pop culture. And I mean, their spaces were free. Absolutely free.
Kind of like what
the Martinsburg
Library
did here. Yeah, and it was on a much bigger scale. I mean, in Hagerstown. But like I said, the only thing they asked was that you donated, I think it was 15 or 20% of your sales to the library. You can't beat that. I mean, it's just, you can't beat that if you're a vendor. I mean, especially with 1,000 people walking through. I mean, that's a steal.
With the library, they said they got about 750, 800 people.
Yeah, that's what I said. I
doubt that number, but it was way more than...
It was more than I think a lot of people were expecting. I was here briefly for that, too. I mean, they could have used, in my personal professional opinion, they probably could have used some more vendors. They could have used some more. They could have utilized some more of the inside space. I mean, especially with some of the, they could have utilized a lot more of the inside space. Although they could have really made the thing big.
I think because I was a little bit behind the scenes with the Martinsburg, the library show this year, this past May.
And it was also on Free Comic Book Day, if I remember correctly.
The fact is, I think there was a lot of resistance between the town and the higher-ups in the library as to what they could and could not do, where they could and could not put stuff. But that's Martinsburg.
That's one thing I will give the Bright Box Theater, where we're having the on downtown on the Walkie Mall in Winchester, Virginia, for Four State. They have been so supportive. They've opened the whole venue up for us, gave us a really great deal. I mean, they're great people. They have great comedy shows, great, you know, other kinds of shows, bluegrass. You know, they have a lot of stuff like that or whatever. They have a nice stage area, which we can't wait to have the bands on. And like I said, I mean, you know, the Bright Box really, you know, they've really went above and beyond, you know, what a lot of venues would do for you. So I just wanted to, you know, get that out there and thank them as well.
To kind of separate yourself from Four State for a little bit.
Hi, guys, I'm Matt. Nice to meet
you. What could you say was the best con, if you went to a con, what was the best one you went to?
Oh, man, there's so many good ones. I mean, Monster Mania in Jersey is always a good con. I mean, every year in, year out, always great guests. I mean, that's kind of, you know, this past summer I went down to Scares That Cares weekend, which is Joe Ripple. We're going to have a table set up for them as well. Joe Ripple's a great guy. He has a great charity, Scares That Cares. Look it up, scaresthatcares.org. Has a great convention too. If you're looking for like pop culture or Comic-Con type stuff, there's a great one up in Altoona, Pennsylvania called the Sci-Fi Valley Con. It's really a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool movie cars, a lot of great vendors. It's not really so big on the guests. It's more like a new school con with like just more vendors and more cosplay and things like that. But if you're into Comic-Cons, Sci-Fi and the Valley Con has a great setup up there in Altoona. So I mean, if you're just, it's not a horror con by any means. I mean, there's not a whole lot of horror going on at that place like that. I mean,
just one of those shows that, hey, if you're a fan of this, we're going to have a good time today.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, you know, we have, you know, the Batmobile, the Mystery Machine, the Jurassic Park Jeep, which the guy who runs the con built from scratch, actually, built himself a Jurassic Park Jeep.
To me, that was along the similar lines. I went to, this was going on a little more than 10 years ago. Went to Duke Fest down in Virginia. It was run by the guy who played Cooter. It was just one of those, hey, we have a Dukes of Hazzard car show, Bluegrass Festival, and it's a get-together of the fans of Dukes of Hazzard. It was just a nice day out, country setting. It was just come down, have fun.
There was a little chill little con I went to back in April up in the Philly area that was kind of like that. It was like a lot of different things or whatever. It was called the Amazicon. It's a new thing. Apparently, I think it might have been the first one they ever did. It was a first year con, just like Forest State, and it was fun. Like they had some cool stuff up there. I mean, you know, some cool vendors. I mean, everybody was real nice. It was fun. You had like I said, you had the Dukes of Hazzard replica, the Jersey General. You had an Ecto-1 replica. My good friend, and actually she's going to be a Forest State Slasher Con, Rochelle Davis from The Crow, who played Sarah, the little girl. I mean, she's really gotten a lot of positive. The Crow was an amazing movie. I mean, that's one of my all-time favorites. One of the movies that got me into horror when I was a kid. But yeah, I mean, Amazicon, that was a fun thing too, actually.
Have you been to any type of, bad cons that just plain rubbed you the wrong way somehow?
Well, I don't like to talk about that. I don't like to diss anybody for trying because this is very hard to do. I mean, like, now there are cons. The internet, it's just a simple Google search on this one. But last year there was a con in Ohio called Epic Con. And it was an epic con, but not in the way you think it was. A lot of the guests got screwed over, didn't get their flights paid for, didn't get their hotels paid for. Some of them got stranded there, actually. The one guy from Nightmare on Elm Street got stranded there. It's all simple Google search. Look up Epic Con, Ohio. And it was just a mess, apparently. I didn't go. I mean, I didn't actually go, even though I was invited to it. I wound up doing an event here at the Alamo that was much more successful. But, yeah, that's...
It was our second episode, folks. Our first throwback episode goes into one of the actual shows that rubbed me the wrong way. But one of the many years ago, I went to a failed show. It was out of Hagerstown. This is back when MySpace was very popular.
This was a little while back.
Got a message because I, at that time, like I am now, friends with a lot of other shows through my feed. Hey, I'm having this horror event in Hagerstown. Come on by.
Was that the Venice Inn, I think, was with them?
Yeah, I think the supposed headliners were from the movie The Mutilator.
Yeah.
I figured it's Hagerstown.
And that was a great movie, like very underrated movie. I love The Mutilator.
I was like, it's in Hagerstown. I lived in Inwood. It's
30-minute drive.
I figured I'll go check it out and
just show your support for a local event or whatever. I try to do that too.
Like I said, I had enough money to get me in the door, so to speak. And a mutual friend of ours, he goes by Big Candy on the show.
Yeah.
He was living with me at the time. He said, "Listen, it's a 2-day event. You go up, scout. You're off today on Friday. Go up, check it out. If everything is kosher, we all go on Saturday." I go up that Friday. There was nothing on the marquee saying it was there. I drove by the location 4 times. Didn't even know it was happening. When I walk in, I didn't know it was actually there until I walked past the promoter talking about it. And one of the downsides, it was happening on Easter weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And
there was, I remember the one con used to try to run on Labor Day weekend. That's a mistake. You don't run. Yeah. You just don't run on those weekends because everybody's going out of town. Everybody, you know, goes on
right.
trips and family vacations and things like that.
And the thing is, I got, in essence, their VIP package for free. Literally for free. I got to have, they had the writer, director of Mutilator there. The only people that, media guests, if you will,
yeah.
that showed up was the writer, director of, Mutilator,
mm-hmm.
their special effects director, the lead actor and the lead actress, in essence, the two that survived. Those were only four people that showed up.
Wow.
And I got both versions of the poster signed. One of the posters signed by everybody. I got, in essence, $250 worth of stuff, basically for
free. Absolutely free, basically.
And
just for showing up.
Just for showing up. I got to see the movie for the first time there, and on my way out the next day, because I was just talking, it was like having a panel.
Like your own private panel
with them the next day, and he said, he went to the little conference, it was about, the room that we was in, it was about the size of our recording location now, which is kind of bad for a show anyway.
You're talking about the room we're sitting in right now.
Right.
Yeah, no. It's
and the writer-director leans up, because he had some of the stuff from the movie. He leans down, picks up a box, which has had his company logo on it, and the working title of the film. He goes, here. It was the working trailer for the film.
Oh, wow.
And
man, like I said, I'm a big fan. I have a t-shirt and everything of that movie. Man, that would have been a dream come true.
As a fan, movie fan, it's... Granted, it's not a screen used.
Well, yeah, of course.
But it's still
pretty cool.
Pretty cool that, as a fan, it's like, dude, and just walk and having the posters he gave were freaking big and real nice. They weren't folded; they were nice and rolled and flat. I just have to have them framed properly and. But that costs like $400.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, you're getting that custom framing's not cheap.
No, it's. I mean, like. No, not on my funds right now.
Got it. Yeah,
so it's understandable. So everything's like pretty much mummified and packed, and so nothing gets scuffed and worn and damaged. So as you're kind of hinting at, you're kind of a movie buff. What kind of movies are you into, or is it just mostly horror?
It's a lot of horror. I mean, I do enjoy, you know, like comedies and whatnot sometimes. I mean, you know, I'll enjoy any movie if it's made well or has a good story to it or whatever. I mean, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of all the CGI and whatnot that happens now. I mean, I like movies that happen, you know, it seems like real people doing real things. I mean, if that makes sense. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, of course I love the horror stuff. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't be doing a convention, but I mean, I'm a fanboy first and foremost. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've been working a lot on like independent movies, and we have a lot of great independent movies showing at SlasherCon, you know, that are made right here in this area. We have like film groups like Creepy Crawl Entertainment. They're doing a lot of cool stuff in this area or whatever. Dusty's a good friend of mine, and I've been, you know, actually trying my hand at acting. I never acted really before in my life. I mean, you know, it's just something fun, but it's fun to do. You know, his movie Radioactive Flesh Eating Foliage is premiering at SlasherCon as well. So, I mean, so that'll be a lot of fun. There's also a guy right here in Martinsburg that does some pretty cool stuff, kind of Troma-esque type stuff.
Yeah.
His name's Brad Twigg, runs Fuzzy Monkey Films. We're going to be showing his flick MILFs versus Zombies, and it's a wild ride, to say the least. It's cool.
That's what I've told a lot of people, that the independent
movie better than mainstream.
And a lot of it seems like they're putting a lot of effort into it.
The heart is there.
They're doing it on cheap, and a lot of stuff is they're going after the fans like us, and like, hey, we can't really pay it. And we're like, we'll do it for a Subway sandwich.
Yeah, we'll do it for a pizza or something. Like that. Yeah. I mean, or hell, even if you do it for free, you're just like, it's like, all right, well, you put me in a movie here, I'll buy you pizza. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
a lot of it, when I don't know if you heard of him. I'm a big fan of Darkstone, John Johnson.
Oh, I love John. He was at my fest last year.
And John's he's a great guy. A lot of his stuff seems like, again, you probably see it with a lot of the independents that are out there, are very original. New stories.
Oh, yeah.
The stories are solid, and it's not like the mainstream stuff that it seems rehashed, reused.
Right, absolutely. It's all remake. It's all about the remake now. Everything's remade, redone, redo this, redo that. It's like leave it alone. That's what you're like telling me, you know what I mean?
That's why I've also told a lot of people, like, my favorite horror remake so far has been the Jason remake, the Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that was good. Derek Mears played Jason.
And on the complete opposite, The Nightmare on Elm Street, I didn't like.
Okay, here's where I'm gonna lose all credibility. I really liked it, actually. I like I'm like one of the few people on earth that liked that movie because I love Jackie Earle Haley. I think he's a great actor. I'm not saying he didn't.
He's the person who played
Freddy.
I'm not knocking that. Just that the movie as a whole.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could definitely see the Freddy fan like being a little off put by it because it was definitely a different aspect of it. But I like the darker, more like kind of violent, more, you know, hey, I'm a rapist, and how you like that? I mean, where they really put it out there or whatever. I mean, I guess I'm more of a fan of like in your face. I mean, because to me, I mean, you know, Freddy's an icon. He's a legend. I mean, everybody loves Freddy Krueger. But to me, he talked too damn much. I mean, I'm not a fan. I like the Jasons, the Leatherfaces, the Michael Myers. They don't say anything. They just kill you.
With those two movies, I also had two different theater experiences with those two movies.
Right. I saw them both in the theater as well.
Both of them I saw at the Regal Theater in Hagerstown.
Okay.
When I saw Friday the 13th, I had to sit, because it was packed, I had to sit up front. I don't mind sitting up front, but I'm hearing the tween girls behind me. And the whole theater, lightning would strike as you see. The whole theater jumped and like, oh my, like scared and... Throughout the whole film, I'm trying to hold back laughter, not at the film.
But at everybody else.
Because I'm hearing the tween girls, I should have stayed in the bathroom for the movie. How did I get talked into this? I'm like, oh my God.
This isn't even really that bad.
And on the flip, with the Nightmare remake, everybody was treating the movie like a joke. Literally like it was a comedy. I'm like, really?
He was a very violent, very, you know, I mean, it was a different take on Freddy. Yeah. I mean, you know, he had a couple little cheesy little one-liners in there, but aside from that, I mean, he was a bad dude.
As I've been hearing, it's like with the new Freddy, the remake that was out a few years ago, they tried to make a darker version of the original.
Yeah,
granted. The follow-up movies to the original were, they made Freddy a little cartoony.
Yeah, more like, hey, you know, like yeah, exactly, cartoony. That's a good
but granted, you and I grew up with the Cookie Cutter slasher flip.
Oh, yeah, of course.
As I said last week, they helped at least me through puberty. You know, this is before a lot of us had, you know, Skinamax and so forth.
Skinamax.
Our only taste of, you know, female nudity was through... The cookie cutter slash.
Because it's not like the girls were asking us out, right?
Right. So we're just there watching it on HBO, like, this is too cool. And watching the original, not Army of Darkness, but Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Not knowing what this movie was.
Oh, yeah. Just, I mean, the Evil Dead movies were very innovative. I thought they were very, very, very original, very creative. I mean, you could tell Sam Raimi was destined for greatness. I mean, and I'm not sure. Have you ever seen a movie that he did? It was an obscure movie. Danny Hicks from SlasherCon is actually going to be, it was actually the star in it. It was a movie called Intruder.
It rings
about
a faint bell.
About a grocery store owner, and it was a wild movie. I mean, and Bruce Campbell was in it for like 2 seconds. Like, he was at the end. He was one of the cops.
When I was young, in my teens, I burnt through so many horror films.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to keep.
It's kind of hard. I'm aging myself. When I'd go into a Blockbuster, I'd like, did I see this movie? Pick up the case. Oh, yeah, I did. So that's the name of the movie.
Yeah, that's the. You know, I was gonna say I got you. Yeah, I know how that is. But yeah, but Intruder is a great movie. You ought to look it up. It's fantastic.
Like, I know there's a
really well written. It was low budget, but it was great.
It's probably on that new. There's a Netflix horror type horror.
Oh yeah, what's the name of that? Like Shudder. Shudder Channel.
From what I've been hearing,
Crypt TV is another one.
They're not going with the algorithm like Netflix. It's, hey, you should, kind of like what we would do, you should watch this.
Yeah, it's like, hey, it's like recommended. It's like, this
is an actual really person cool. recommending.
Absolutely. I was going to say, it's pretty cool. So,
don't mind me, folks. I'm still getting over what I got. So, I'm on the proper meds now. Don't worry. We'll be weird as ever. Were there any movies that you hate or just like, nope?
I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of let's see here. What are some movies I've seen recently that I really didn't like? There's lots of bad horror movies. I mean, that goes without saying. Speaking of remakes, there's a few of them. Well, there's at least one of them sticks out in my mind that I really didn't like. I mean, I give a lot of the remakes credit. I mean, I really dug the Wizard of Gore remake. I really dug the Night of the Demons remake. I thought that was, very appropriate. The one I didn't really care for so much was Last House on the Left. I didn't really care for that remake at all. And neither did David Hess. I actually got to make fun of that before he passed away a few years ago with him at a horror convention, which is really cool.
I know, it was a remake. It came out a couple, 10, 15 years ago. Not even that. It was not at Last House. It was a Vincent Price film.
Hills Have Eyes? House on Haunted Hill?
House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah, that one.
I went to the theater to see that, and I'm walking out, and so a woman older than I was at the time, who obviously would have seen it in the theater when she was young.
In the 60s or whatever.
Yeah. And I turned to her, because we left roughly within 30 seconds of each other. I turned to her, not bad for a remake. And she went, it was a remake? Wait a minute. You could have seen this as a kid.
Yeah, with Vincent Price.
Yeah. Or, that sort of thing. A lot of people knock Hellraiser 3.
Oh, Hell on Earth?
No, it was 4, Bloodlines.
Yeah, Bloodlines.
But I've told people I've had the best theater experience with that movie ever. The movie itself is maybe about, out of 10, maybe a 6 or 7.
I was going to say 5 or 6. It wasn't one of the
best
ones of the franchise. The movie, it was decent.
The movie experience I had with it upped it to at least an 8.
Right.
Because when I went to see it, there was maybe 3, not even 8 people in the theater, including myself. But as soon as I stepped through the doors of the theater, sheer downpour, pour rain, thunder, lightning.
So it just added to the
experience. And they said it was theater number 5, which was on the hallway down on the right. It was the last theater on the right.
Nice.
With the flickering bulb over it. I'm like, you can't get any better experience going to see a horror movie than that, especially when the horror movie was over, the storm never happened. The parking lot was dry, cars were dry.
Jeez.
And I was like, you couldn't even smell that rain.
Yeah, you're gonna
and I'm like, what better, again, what better experience could you match for a horror film than that? Matt's nodding to that, and it's like, yeah, movies suck, but you got that.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's all about the experience that you have with it or whatever. There's some movie experiences that you'll never forget, that's for sure.
Have there, I know we lost, as horror fans in a little bit, we lost the guy who set the standard for a lot of slasher films in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Wes Craven.
Mr. Craven.
As we said last week, that he might have not made slasher films popular, but he set the bar.
He really innovated. Yeah, I was going to say with Nightmare on Elm Street, and of course Last House on the Left, his first feature film was Last House on the Left. We were just talking about that. Then, of course, Nightmare, and he had some other cool ones too, like the underrated ones, like Shocker, and The movie I always thought of his, I mean, some people didn't care for it, but I thought it was really underrated, especially as far as story and acting and whatnot, was My Soul to Take. It was one of his last movies, actually. It came out about 4 or 5 years ago, and I mean, yeah, it was a great movie, but yet it didn't really get a whole lot of publicity.
What are your thoughts about the pussification of horror movies, that they got to be PG-13?
Oh, I hate it. I mean, like, seriously, the horror movies, I don't think, in my opinion, were meant to be PG-13. I mean, you know, if you want a PG-13 movie, you go watch Iron Man, or you watch The Avengers or something like that.
Because
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Because in recent years, I think a lot of people have noticed that horror movies, we got to be more family. It's more the jump scare.
It's money is what it is. Yeah. It's all about money or whatever. Now, some of these PG-13 movies are still rather, you know, cutting edge. I mean, you know, like the Sinister movies and like movies like that. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know, some of these movies, I don't know how they get away with a PG-13 rating. I guess, you know, times have changed, you know.
I'm not going to age you, but I remember when, even with PG-13 films, that a topless girl could walk through the scene and still... You're wondering, how is this a PG-13 film?
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, it's all perception. Yeah, it's all about perception.
But then again, that was the late 80s, early 90s anyway.
Yeah.
And
it was when people really started to get comfortable with nudity in movies. I mean, like, because a lot of times...
Even now, but now it's, there's a nipple slip. It's an R.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm like, really? Come on. You know, it's just...
I mean, most kids, especially with the internet now... I mean, they've all seen a pair of tits before they're 13 years old, especially right. With the internet. I mean, I'm just saying, especially with, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, like I said, with us, you know, in our generation, we had to sneak into our dad's den and, you know, and find his Playboy stash. I mean, but apart from that, I mean, you know, I mean, nowadays with the internet, you can find boobs. Just type them in, type in Google search and boobs everywhere.
Again, that's going back to a previous topic with the independent movie makers. They're kind of going a little old school by having the blood, the guts, the gore, the nudity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, like I said, I mean, and a lot, there was, you know, and of course, you know, Wes Craven set a lot of the bar for that or whatever. But I mean, a lot of these guys, especially the filmmakers that I know, you know, from this area or whatever, from this, you know, general area, I mean, are very influenced by Troma, which was very, you know, which really set the bar for that. And Herschel Gordon Lewis, of course, before that was really, you know, low budget, just blood, sleaze, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But like I said, I'm good friends with some of the guys that work at Troma or whatever, and that's a very influential company on a lot of these. Well, I mean, because Troma can basically told you, hey, you know, it, just because it's no budget doesn't mean people's not gonna like it. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
with people like Troma,
there's a lot of other other companies too.
Like Troma, and even some of the mainstream directors like, I'm probably misdoing his name, Robert Rodriguez, and, you know, saying that you could do stuff by yourself. Look at what I did.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm mainstream now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now
I've started way down the line and just, you know,
worked up.
That you too can do the same thing.
Yeah, if you have the talent and
the drive and
and the connections don't hurt either. I mean, just saying. I mean, Rodriguez was good friends with Quentin Tarantino. They kind of came like right next to each other. It seemed like,
right.
I mean, and of course the Grindhouse double feature, I really dug it. I really enjoyed that.
That's why I kind of enjoy Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino, because they're setting themselves apart from rest of Hollywood, that doing the Grindhouse, doing kind of something a little bit different.
Yeah, the machetes and
low budget,
the Kill Bills. I mean, except, I mean, yeah, that's just that's not something that any production company would touch if it wasn't Robert Rodriguez or Quentin Tarantino. Absolutely.
But still, it's that, hey, we're doing stuff our own way,
and people are liking it. People like it. I mean, people love it. I mean,
but and with Troma saying, hey, you can do this on low budget as it is, but with Troma, the then with the fans, it's like a lot of the fans don't like the older fans don't like the new stuff.
And the new fans
don't like the old stuff.
It's, yeah, I was going to say, there's definitely a generation. Well, I mean, Kostroma's been around for 30-some years. Yeah. There's going to be a generation gap. I mean, it's definitely a generation gap. Now, see, me personally, I'm more of a fan of the older Troma stuff. I like Romeo and Juliet, Toxic Avenger. You know,
I love the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, I was going to say, those were the movies I dug. Surf Nazis Must Die had that so bad it was good feel to it. I mean,
I say bounce with a movie. That it's so bad, it bounces back somehow.
Yeah,
that's
good. But then there's also those movies that go, what is it, that are so bad they've gone past good and back to bad again. It's like they've gone from, you know.
Then you're just sitting there like, this is just a train wreck. Why am I watching
this? Yeah, why am I even watching this? Like,
That's one of the things I plan to do. I know there's a lot of Roger Corman is the best for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
For the show, I'm planning to at least, because some of those movies are on Netflix. Drunken comedy commentary for those movies that are on Netflix, that, you know, just sitting there with a 24-pack of beer, why don't you walk by four sets of knives, a chainsaw, and a gun to pick up a baseball bat, you know? And the guy's coming at you with claws, you know?
Yeah, it's like you're not going to fight him with a baseball bat. It's true. I remember they used to have those specials at the Alamo. They were like the what were they called? The horror remixes.
Yeah.
The Mutilator was actually part of one, actually. We were just discussing that movie. So was Night of the Demons. A lot of these Hell High, a lot of these B movies that we all like, Intruder, a lot of these movies we brought up. And like they had these two little puppets. They called them Cheesecake and Thunderclap, and like they only show you what they call the best parts of the movie. It'd be like 30 minutes of the movie all cut up or whatever.
Kind of like a MST3K.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I was gonna say sort of kind of. Yeah, I was gonna say, but yeah, these two puppets would come on and they would just rip these movies to no end, like everything bad. They'd be like, I remember one time, what was that movie? Was it Trick or Treat, the one with Gene Simmons and Ozzy as the remember?
I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, well, remember back in the day they had that theory. Well, if you play the record backward, it was satanic, right, or whatever. You know, like
the Gate.
Yeah, exactly. The Gate. Yeah, the Gate was kind of like that too. I was gonna say, but yeah, but it was the one puppet said, "I got some of my records. I'm gonna play them backwards, see what they say." And he said, "I got my record here. I got cha cha cha." And the other puppet looks at him and goes, "Dude, if you played that backwards, it would say ach, ach, ach." That was a really funny joke. I was like, ach, ach, instead of cha, cha, cha. Yeah, ach, ach, ach.
So, have there been movies with great theater experiences that you've encountered? Or?
Oh, every Tuesday at the Alamo in Winchester, they have Psycho Cinema, which is old horror movie. They just showed the original Nightmare on Elm Street this past Tuesday. Let's see. How many of these have I been to? I go to a lot of them. They do all the cool 80s stuff. It's Return of the Living Dead, Fright Night, Motel Hell. They've all shown, yeah, what's it? It takes all kinds of critters to make Farmer Vincent's fritters or whatever. Yeah. Silent Night, Deadly Night played there. Ghoulies. I mean, just all the great 80s stuff. I mean, and then they show newer movies too, but it's every Tuesday night usually at the Alamo Draft House in Winchester. The cool thing about that theater is too, they actually will serve you meals and you can drink beers while you watch movies.
I have nothing against Alamo. I love the theater. I've been there once, but to me, it's like a little bit on my budget right now.
It's not the cheapest. It's not Berkeley Plaza. We'll go to that Berkeley Plaza theater.
I'm not knocking Alamo. Went there. It was a great experience.
Again, oh, yeah.
The whole aspect of, like you said, drinking beer and watching a movie, you know.
It works.
Somehow it works.
I don't know why more theaters haven't thought of that, quite frankly. I'm really surprised that that's not actually I guess I understand, you know, and I guess they want to keep the beers, like, especially out of the all-ages movies, right, or whatever. I mean, you know, now I'm sure, you know, there's probably some kind of restrictions and regulations that have to go through that. I don't know. I don't run the place. But, I mean, it's definitely a cool concept, especially with the old horror stuff. I mean, they showed Maniac Cop there, which is a very underrated flick. A lot of people kind of forgot about that.
How'd you get into a lot of these horror movies?
My dad. Me and him have been watching horror movies since I was a kid. He's a huge horror buff, been going to conventions for years. you know, I mean, yeah, he really influenced me. I mean, in that aspect, I mean, because, you know, my dad, I mean, I love the guy. He's probably, I know this sounds weird, but my dad's probably one of my best friends. So, I mean,
for me, it wasn't so much my folks. My dad is the one that got me into, like, Carlin and some of the comedians.
Yeah, Carlin.
But for me, it was just, like, getting ready for school one day and just stumbling upon Evil Dead 2 and watching the classic car, what we would now call classic horror.
Oh, yeah, Night of the Living Dead.
And because always what would happen is, like, on HBO, between this time and this time, it was, like, a horror movie time.
Yeah.
It was always on, like, a Friday or Saturday night, watching, like, Motel Hell, Ghoulies or something like that. Not to mention on the weekends when I was growing up, there was always the Elvira.
Oh, yeah, the movie Macabre.
And for a while, it was Monster Vision on USA, which was hosted by Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah.
And his downfall, I got it from him, it went right after it was canceled. I found his email address and emailed him, like, what happened? You know, you were canceled. And he emailed, he said, yeah, basically what happened was right after the merger between Time Warner Productions and AOL, he walked in and he said, go home. We don't want you here. And he said, a lot of times when I walked in, I wanted to show the Nightmare on Elm Streets, the Halloweens, the what
Friday the 13th,
that made me popular on the premier movie stations like HBO. He said, but the thing is, what they told him was, when you air at 10 o'clock Eastern, it's going to be 7 o'clock California, and we have no control over that.
Yeah,
and
we can't have you on at 7 o'clock in the West.
If it was constantly 10 o'clock throughout the states, it'd be no problem.
But it's not.
So it's not, and it was. But right after that merger, it's just AOL doesn't want you here anymore. They don't like you.
So bye.
So it. But then again, just watching those type of movies at 10 o'clock, you know. Late staying up, even as an adult, to like 2 o'clock in the morning, I gotta watch this. Gotta watch. But yeah.
And back then they didn't have the Red Bulls and the Monsters and the things like that could keep you up all night.
And thankfully my folks got me a VCR that actually recorded.
That you could actually set the times. I remember those. I remember those.
Getting the minuscule amounts for them, like, I gotta use this VCR tape. I want the 8-hour tapes. 8-hour.
So I'll set it for four. So, I mean, I'll go to bed at midnight, and it'll tape at like 2.
Right. And I met, but the thing is, I miscalculate the time left on the tape, and right at the end of the movie,
click.
I'm like, oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's why I thanked Joel Hodges, the creator of MST3K, that he saved my bacon so many times by playing those cheesy movies. I got to see the end.
Right.
And it's like, hey, you gave me a great TV experience, and I still got to complete the movie set.
Now, speaking of horror hosts, I just want to throw this out there real quick. I know like a lot of people think horror hosts are a thing of the past. I mean, you know, they don't really see a whole lot of that kind of thing anymore. Well, coming to Four State Slasher Con, not to keep pimping this or whatever.
Pimp away.
Yeah, I was just saying, but we have DC's second most legendary horror host behind Count Gorbadal, of course. You know, I mean, one from the 60s or whatever. Yeah, the one my dad grew up watching. We have Jerry Moore from Monster Madhouse. Now, a lot of people outside the DC area, because he's only on like limited access down there or whatever, but Monster Madhouse has been a horror-themed schlock comedy show. They do all these cool like B movies or whatever and whatnot, and Jerry Moore plays
Knocking those, but weren't they all like that?
Well, yeah, and that's what I said, and Jerry Moore has done Jerry, aka Carlos Borloff, has been doing this for 25 years. He's been doing this for doing this show, Monster Madhouse, or whatever. He's been a mainstay at cons and whatnot. And we're really happy to say that he'll be at Four State SlasherCon. He's really looking forward to coming. And I mean, you know, he's going to bring like some of this stuff or whatever. He's actually going to be hosting some of the panels. The Creepshow 2 panel he's hosting. We're probably going to have him host a couple other ones too. And you know, he loves running around with his video camera. I mean, he's just one of a kind guy. I mean, like I said, I mean, just, you know, Carlos Borloff. And like I said, you can check out Monster Madhouse. They have a lot of their specials. You can watch some of them on YouTube for free. I mean, hour and a half specials for free.
And I'll try in our show descriptions, I'll put links for the Facebook page for Four State.
Oh, absolutely, yes. But yeah. That way they can get all of the, because I mean, we've discussed a lot of it. We haven't discussed all the information.
Right.
So much more we haven't even touched on yet.
Again, it's in Winchester, Virginia, October 16th and 17th.
Yes, Friday and Saturday.
What time do they start?
Oh, we start with a VIP. We have a VIP package or whatever, and they get in an hour early. So, but the mainstream tickets, it goes from 3:00 in the afternoon to 1:00 a.m.
And then,
no, and that's Friday and Saturday. It goes from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Yeah, it's all day and all night because we have bands playing at night. We have the movies showing during the day. It's a 3-floor theater, so we're using all 3 floors for the max. We have vendors. We got all kinds of cool stuff happening here. And I'm not sure how we're doing on time.
We got plenty of time.
Okay, well that's cool. Like I said, yeah. Well, another thing I wanted to bring up, was like I said, we just mentioned Maniac Cop, and as you know, Robert Zadar just passed away, the guy that played Maniac Cop.
I've been hearing about that.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say he was a great guy. I met him a couple times at cons or whatever. It's really sad that he passed so soon, but we actually have his last movie, one of his last movies he was ever in, screening at Four State. He came out here to Fredericksburg to shoot a movie called Easter Sunday with my friends Jeremy Todd Moorhead and Jason Delgado, and they actually had a pretty cool cast in that movie. They had him. They had the original Jason Voorhees, the kid from the first one, Ari Lehman. He was in it. And they also had an independent movie made by a good friend of mine, David Madison, Mr. Hush, who actually cast this 80s-style B-movie with Stephen Jeffries from Friday Night, Brad Lurie from Halloween. But the main guy, Mr. Hush, was played by a gentleman by the name of Edward X. Young, and he's also in Easter Sunday. Easter Sunday is premiering Friday night at 7:30, and we're going to have a post-show Q&A panel. And we're going to talk about the movie. We're going to talk about the life and times of Robert Zadar, everyone's memory of him or whatever. So if you're a Maniac Cop fan, or you know, Robert Zadar was also in Tango and Cash, a lot of other like B-horror flicks, that's something you definitely want to check out, because we're hopefully going to have on that panel with him, and she's going to be a guest all weekend too, the bombshell from Maniac Cop 1 and 2, Lorraine Landon, the blonde woman, the cop.
I'm going to have to rewatch it. It's been a while.
She was the one that was Bruce Campbell's partner in that movie or whatever, and they were the ones in the first one that kind of ratted out Robert Zadar's character. I'm having a brain fart on what is it. Matt something was his name, I remember, because his first name is me. And but they ratted him out to the feds, and then the second one he came back and got his revenge on everybody. So
just movies like that have always...
Maniac Cop is kind of a tough movie to find nowadays. It's actually, even on DVD and whatnot, it's actually kind of a hard movie.
It's kind of like...
it was a Blue Underground release, and Blue Underground released a lot of great movies.
It's kind of like Mutilator. You can't find it on DVD.
No, I have a bootleg Mutilator.
Same here.
That's how hard it is to find. I mean, you have to...
When I spoke to them, this was, again, this was 2008 when I met them. The guy was talking to me, and he was like, as a person trying to get it on DVD to the fans, he was questioning me from a creator to fan standpoint. Again, this was like a personal one-on-one panel.
Which is unbelievable.
Right. And he was like, would you pay
Why
more?
Why didn't I go to that? I was probably doing some stupid show at some dive bar at night.
Yeah, he's like, would you pay more for something that had more as DVD? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, what are you planning to put on it? He's like, maybe copies of the stills that you saw here, maybe a mini poster, better case, you know, that sort of thing. It was like a collector's edition type deal. And I was like, yeah.
Or maybe like bring in a guy like a Jerry Moore or somebody like that who could do a really good panel, a really good Q&A and whatnot.
This was just for the DVD. And I think he said he was trying to raise funds to have it done on DVD. I'm guessing
it never happened. I was going to say, I'm guessing it probably never happened or whatever, but yeah.
We're plenty of time.
Oh, it's all good.
That's what we're breaking the kind of the fourth wall here. Audacity lets us go past 30 minutes. So with GarageBand, we would only be limited to 30 minutes.
Oh, gotcha.
What we got, time's not a problem.
Okay, cool.
So
we can cut all this out too, right?
Yeah. Let's see. I know there's a lot of stuff I could cover, and I'm just checking everything on. Yeah, let's see. Do we break $3,000 mark? Nope. To $29.77. What are your thoughts about rehashing? Damn this cold. I blame the cold, folks.
Yeah, I know. Trust me. I'm not feeling
great. It's the medication I'm on, too.
It's funk.
Other than, what about comedy horror again, like Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, and that kind of has the horror element, but a little bit of the comedy.
Oh, that stuff's fun. I mean, that's some of the best stuff you can get. I haven't enjoyed movies like these, what do they call them, zombies, like the zombie comedy, right. Like Shaun of the Dead, Last of the Living, you know, those movies. I mean, it's good fun. I mean, if done right.
What about the aspects of found footage movies that you think it's been overplayed a little bit, or
I'm not a huge fan of them, I'll be honest with you. Personally speaking, it depends on the topic, really.
For me it's 50-50.
Yeah, exactly. It's 50-50. Now granted, one of the biggest movie that ever come out of this area was a found footage movie. I mean, of course, the Blair Witch Project. I saw that in the theater. It was a fun time. You know, for the time.
Again, that, like you said, Blair Witch. It's one of those movies that, like Wes Craven's Scream, it set a bar.
Oh, all of a sudden,
it released a slew of
these found footage
movies. Yeah. Again, it was. Blair Witch was done with, what, $30,000?
Not even, I don't think it was that. I think it might have been closer to $10,000, actually.
In and around there.
It was cheap.
Cheap.
Very cheap.
And
it made like $20 million.
Yeah. Now you have a lot of...
Everybody trying to make the next Blair, trying to, you know, be the next
that.
I mean, the same thing happens with bands and whatnot, too. Like, I've been a music promoter for years. You know, when one band gets big, there's 20 carbon copies of the band. You know, like Nirvana got big, then everybody wanted to be Nirvana. Then Green Day got big, everybody wanted to be Green Day. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, as soon as somebody gets successful with it, there's all these carbon copies of it. You know?
To move from movies to music a little bit.
Yeah.
With bands like Nirvana, for me, as a fan standpoint, when Nirvana, like you said, Nirvana got big, it just seemed like the Universal Studios, the Warner Brothers, the Sonys, they saw how big Nirvana was getting, and it's like, hey, people are going to love this. Let's bring in this band. Let's bring in this band.
Exactly. As I said, yeah, there was a lot of carbon copies.
Not so much carbon copies. Partly carbon copies, and there was that niche opening up, but I've had people that I've worked with, like, especially when you see your bands, like, I just heard recently Violent Femmes is putting out a new album.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard much of them in a long time. I mean, I know they've toured and whatnot, but not new material.
This is off of a current episode of Nerdist. Chris Hardwick interviewed the Violent Femmes, and they kind of let it leak that they're going to be putting out a new album.
Cool. I really dug their first album. I mean, did you see them when they played at Shepherd College over there?
No.
I did. I was a kid. I was still in high school when that happened. But yeah, that's when they played at Shepherd College.
I have people I know at work that, like, when you mentioned, their music is equivalent of dubstep. Dubstep is, all, you know, that type of deal.
Yeah, I mean,
and
you know,
it's the club music and
dance music, or
You mentioned, like, what about Metallica? What about AC/DC? What about
Slayer?
Slayer, Violent Femmes, you know, Tom Petty, you know, decent bands that have been around for a while. Especially a band like Lord, you know, that's been around. I'm talking about, you know, the kind of like a horror type band like
The Misfits.
Like The Misfits or Green War.
Green Jello.
Yeah, they're a band like that, but more, instead of hard heavy metal, they're more, they borderline hard rock and heavy metal.
Right.
And you know, I mentioned it like that, and they're like, he's like, well, they're from the 60s. What? And I'm like, what about Pearl Jam? Oh, they're from the 60s and 70s, too.
Yeah, I know. They think all this stuff's like ancient or something, when really it came out in their lifetime. I mean, if
you Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. AC/DC put out an... It's like, well, if they suck because they haven't put out an album in, like, God knows how long. I'm like, wait a minute, AC/DC just put out an album.
Yeah.
Lord's last album came out last, like, 2000.
2 years ago, before Rocky died, before Dave Rocky passed away or whatever.
You know, Lord came out with an album. Queen's coming out with a new album. Granted,
it's got Adam Lambert, but still, it's got the new there. But still, it's going to happen. I mean,
but, like, you know, you have, what about them? Oh, they still suck. No, they don't. Because without the music, that music being an inspiration for today's music, what have you got? And he doesn't know what he said. You know,
it's kids being kids. Kids are kids. I mean, they're gonna, you know, I was a stupid teenager once too. I'm sure you were as well. You know what I mean?
I had restrictive parents that were, you know, you can't listen to, you know, AC/DC because
or Alice Cooper.
But, Black Sabbath, you know, here's Billy Joel and, you know,
Elton John and.
No, I want to say Elton John's not so bad, but it's just when your folks are listening to Elton John or Phil Collins, it's like, you're not cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just, granted, I understand why you like them, but no.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, but I want to listen to, all my friends are listening to AC/DC and
Metallica
and Bon Jovi. No, you can't listen to them because reasons. Yeah. I'm the parent, you're the child.
Yeah.
But here's Beast Boys.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, my folks were quite the opposite. My dad's a metalhead. He's always a heavy metal guy or whatever, and I've listened to it since I was 3 years. I've listened to it since I was in the womb, probably. I'm sure he was putting headphones on, here, listen to this.
But for me, it wasn't until the past, I'd say 15 years, when you were able to rip CDs and make MP3s and so forth and so on. Where I had friends like yourself, so to speak, they're like, what, you never heard heavy metal? Here's some Ozzy. Here's some, you know.
Dio. Here's some Motorhead.
Here's some Ozzy. Here's some System of a Down. Here's some this. Here's some
that. Yeah, Godsmack.
Godsmack. And
Clutch. You know?
Here's some Tool. You know, shoveling CDs and my Burt CDs and my collection compilation CDs. Saying, listen to this. Put this in your, you know, rip them, make your own. And with our mutual friend Big Candy, who's like big punk head, here's some punk albums.
Here's some Exploited, Misfits, and Sex Pistols, Minor Threat.
Just listen, here, you know, here's, you know, not a music CD, it's a data CD, you know, put it in your computer, rip, listen, you know, and just that way. And that.
Well, I mean, and then, of course, we had that whole Napster trouble a few years back or whatever with Metallica and whatnot. And, you know, that showed, I mean, kind of downgraded them a little bit because it made them look like a bunch of hypocrites because that's how they got big, was people trading their tapes.
For me, it was like being on that end of things. It was like there was a little bit of a side program before Napster called Hotline.
Hotline, I always say, then Kazaa and that Morpheus. Sort of thing. There was a bunch of different ones.
And it kind of merged Napster, then it merged to LimeWire. Now it's Pirate Bay.
And a lot of these other, there's some other sites and whatnot, yeah.
And as I, when I spoke to a lot of people about piracy issues, and I hear like different aspects of the stick, so to speak. I'm going to say my opinion about it, and I'll let you comment on it.
Sure.
I'll say this. Granted, it hurts a lot of the newer artists, but my thoughts is, as much as it hurts, depending on what it is and how it can be distributed, it could also benefit that artist as well, as a form of advertising, if done right.
Yeah, exactly.
So it, because again, the internet has made the world a little bit smaller, and that you can almost say that piracy. Someone in New York is now listening to almost like a pirated album from a band in Seattle or LA,
or vice versa.
And when they finally make it to that band, finally makes it to New York, they have a fan base.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's definitely helped out a lot of these touring bands and whatnot for sure. And especially, you know, finding venues, finding connections, because I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to book these DIY tours these bands used to do. All on the telephone, like all just on landline phones. I mean, like seriously, I mean, back in the '80s and whatnot, when they first started doing like the DIY and the independent music and whatnot, and they were like calling these bars like left and right. I mean, can you imagine how much the phone bill was then? Because I mean, long distance was. Right. I mean, they charged you for that back in the day. I remember like before we had cell phones and whatnot. I mean, they used to charge you for that stuff. It was just crazy. I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, like I said, it's hard to think, you know, of a world like that. But I mean, but it wasn't that long ago. It really wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't that long ago at all.
And one of the best stories I've heard about that was Iron Maiden. They did, I think their people hired a company to do a report, and they found out the biggest area for piracy was like South America. And
right.
All of a sudden, when their lawyer said, you know, should we start sending cease and desist letters? They said no. What we want to know is, did we do any tours in South America? And the response came back, no. So
I saw that video. They were playing like 100,000 people a night,
and they were making like $2 million a show.
Yeah,
something like that.
It was just ridiculous. I said, yeah, they said they were like, and then all the metal bands started going to South, because apparently there's a huge metal fan base down there. Apparently all the bands go down there now.
I mean, and that's, you know, using that as a reference, like, yeah, it's kind of almost free advertising, because as someone who's might be new to the genre, that you don't know if you're going to like it.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you that little bit of a taste.
Yeah, it's like, well, and you know what? 9 times out of 10, if somebody, I mean, even if they have a burned CD, if they go, they come to the concert, they buy the T-shirt, they buy the merchandise or whatever, they're still supporting you. I mean, and then Bruce Dickinson even said that when I saw him in concert a few years back. You know what he said? He came on stage. He said, "Hey guys," he said, you know, because it was right during all that piracy issue stuff or whatever.
Right.
He said, "We don't care." He said, "We hope you film this whole concert. Just send us a copy of it." He said, "It's all." He said, "And you know what? Here's a brand new song. Get your tape recorders rolling." And that's what he told the whole crowd. He said, "Yeah, 20,000 people." He's like, because he knows that those people will buy his albums and will buy his merchandise.
Not to mention what I think a lot of major bands do now is concert CDs.
Oh, absolutely. Not DVD and DVDs.
It's of that show.
Yeah.
Because technology has become so convenient now that once, as soon as the show ends, as people are filing out, there's a stack of that show.
Yeah, all they need is their computer. Yeah. All they got to do is process it through the computer.
And just, here's a souvenir, $15 for
the show.
And
yeah, a buddy of mine does that. A buddy of mine has those DVDs and whatnot. Yeah, he sells a lot of those kind of DVDs and concerts and whatnot. My dad's bought several of them of shows that he was at. he was at the show or whatever.
And you get the whatever, because I know that obviously there are some bands out there that do only songs that are never on the CDs or whatever. They're literally show exclusive.
Yeah, or they break out a song that they hardly ever play or something. It's a real treat. You know, I mean, it's a real treat for everybody, you know, to hear it, because they don't get to hear that song anymore. You know, so yeah.
What bands do you think are more controversial? You know, the ones that are more political or what?
Those black metal bands are pretty controversial. The ones from overseas, like in Finland and whatnot, that burn down churches and do crazy.
I haven't heard about that shit.
Oh my God, dude! Like seriously?
Right.
Do tell. There's documentaries about this stuff, man. Over in like Scandinavia and whatnot, they call it like Scandinavian black metal music, and it is literally like straight satanic. Like it's, they hate religion, like they hate all this stuff. And I mean, there's literally been bands that have actually gone to prison for sacrificing people to the devil and actually burning them
on stage.
Yes, they're like I said, I don't know a whole lot about it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not an aficionado about this by any means. But there is, you know, there are documentaries that actually will tell you about these bands and like and how crazy they are and whatnot. I mean, to me that's very kind. I mean, to me that's more controversial than somebody blowing fake shit out of a cannon. I'm sorry, I mean you're blowing fake piss and shit and vomiting. I've seen Gore in concert.
Yeah.
It is a fun time. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, I've seen them two or three times in concert. I like Gore. I'm not dissing them by any means. I'm just saying, like, if you want something that's straight, like, controversial, and of course, you know, you got your political, still got political bands, but you don't hear much
that's why, the thing is, like, I think R.E.M. was, like, one of those type of deals that
Rage Against the Machine.
It's like, as soon as they started to get political, you saw the fan base just
kind of dwindle. Yeah, U2 got really political there for a while, too, I remember. And like I said, but yeah, the one band that really was political that could get away with it, I thought, like I mean, just said, was Rage Against the Machine. Of course, you know, that's what they were. It was kind of take it or leave it with them. Yeah, they didn't get political. They were political the whole time. I mean, they didn't, but Rage Against the Machine was a very I mean, like I said, there's a lot of these like more underground punk bands, like your Anti-Flags and your bands like that or whatever that are very political and whatnot. But I still say, I mean, they've never burned down a church. They've never made a human sacrifice. Now that's controversial to me.
here in the States, like I think it was in the early, I want to say the early 90s, but it might have been the late 80s of like different bands getting. I think it was one female artist that got arrested for. Making loot to like masturbating with a, she picked up a sledgehammer and kind of did.
That was Wendy O. Williams, I want to say, from the Plasmatics. I remember she did a lot of crazy shit like that. I remember.
And she did. She picked up a sledgehammer and did kind of a jerking off gesture with it, and because she was in like one of the Bible Belt states,
she got
arrested for
public masturbating, like some kind of. Lube con.
And I think
it's a misdemeanor. She got off on it.
But pun possibly intended.
Exactly.
But I think the documentary I saw that the guitarist of her guitarist said, wait a minute, she got arrested for that, yet I'm a guitarist and I'm pretty much doing that.
The same thing, just on guitar.
And which is, you hear shit like that. And it's, you don't know if it's done out of complete publicity. Oh, why don't you arrest me? I want to do this on stage. But you have, as a kid, I know growing up, seeing like Elton John, when HBO did concerts, their concert series, or seeing Elton John on the Muppets, or who's the other pianist? His name escapes me right now. I'll probably remember 3 hours from now. But they come out. We were young, seeing Elton John, and we didn't know he was gay. We didn't.
Understand gay at that time.
To us, someone said, "Hey, you're gay," meant, "Hey, you're stupid." You know. Like even when your folks like see Elton John, he's gay. I don't think he's stupid. He's pretty good at musician.
He's a good piano player. He's a good singer.
But you look at him, it's like, oh, the pianist is, not Latin, crap.
Stevie Wonder?
No, a pianist. He was really flamboyantly gay.
Liberace.
And just seeing them, it was like, as someone who's maybe 5 or 6 thinking something is odd about them.
This guy,
I can't put my finger on it, but something's odd about Elton John. Especially Elton John coming out in a duck suit.
Yeah,
it's like
weird. There's Big Ben in the jet glasses.
You know, something's odd about this person. You can't put a finger on it.
Yeah, I mean they're talented, but
especially when you're 6 years old.
Yeah, you don't get it.
And when you're old, you're like, You just look back and like, why didn't I get it? You know,
but you don't get it.
But there are instances like Freddie Mercury from Queen, that when he came out that he was bisexual. But when you hear the story behind it, you're kind of like, as a guy, yeah, it's wrong, but we understand Freddie.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think he...
Well, I mean, Rob Halford from Judas Priest. I mean, how metal is he and how gay is he?
Right. You don't mind. It's like, I didn't realize that Freddie was, Mercury was gay until I was way into Queen back in the early 90s. And I was like, wait a minute, the music's still good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, well, like I said, I mean, look at Judas Priest. I mean, you know, they were the flag wavers for heavy metal for how many years? I mean, you know, and Rob Halford came out, he was gay. So,
and I think the story I was told about Freddie Mercury is that his first wife cheated on him. He went with a roadie. Bad mistake right there.
Mm.
She cheated on him, and that's when he went completely.
Into left field
with, you know, I'm into guys now. And I think as a straight male, like, that's kind of wrong, but I kind of understand. But
women can be evil creatures, that's for sure. I mean, they can be. They're definitely.
It, just from a music standpoint, I've grown up with, from almost the Disney aspect of listening to music, to the almost the hardcore,
the rock and roll,
you know, the heavy metal and the punk aspect. Now, I still fall back to Queen and Tom Petty and so forth, you know, those bands. But occasionally, it's always the harder stuff, the faster stuff. Other than punk and heavy metal, are you into any I'll say the softer stuff.
Oh, I mean, you know, I mean, I try to listen to all kinds of music. I don't really regiment myself to just, you know, regiment yourself too much. I mean, you know, I like some older rap music, older country music. I don't like the new stuff quite so much. I mean, even older, like, pop music,
The Iggy Azaleas and Britney Spears it's the Disney force fed of, oh, we got to look. Not to completely dismiss it, but it's like, oh, we have to dance half the time, and
it's all got to be a certain way. It's very cookie cutter. Right?
It's, yeah, as you said, cookie cutter. There's no. Obviously, there's a band aspect, but there's no band as per Metallica, Queen, or an actual band. But more so the. Primarily the pop singer, the Britney Spears.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not completely literally a singer, a guitarist. I don't want to say cookie cutter band, like the singer, the lead guitarist.
Right.
But it's kind of distancing itself away from what.
Well, I mean, there's always been pop singers since the beginning of time.
But I'm not knocking like a Michael Jackson or something like that.
Yeah, or a Prince or anybody.
Right.
Prince was extremely talented. I mean, of course, that guy plays a lot of instruments. The thing about Prince was, like I said, I mean, you never really hear anything controversial about him either. He just kind of keeps to himself, which is cool. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, there's all aspects of music that are good, and there's aspects of music that are bad. Just like there's bad heavy metal bands or bad punk rock bands, bad everything. I mean,
yeah, there's that always that aspect of you have to find that little bit of I don't want to say needle, but that good gem in a pile of rocks, or that needle in a haystack.
The diamond in the coal or whatever. You know?
Right, and it's just so hard for what appeals to one is not going to appeal to another, and right now we have that spectrum that's out there that's so vast. And when I found out there's something called geek rock, and these bands singing about, you know, their fandoms and all that.
Oh, yeah, like Horse the Band.
And you're like, when did this become a thing, you know?
Well, I mean, there's a whole genre of horror punk and psychobilly, these bands singing about horror movies. And I mean, there's stuff about that. There's actually a good friend of mine. He's actually releasing a free mixtape tomorrow. He's a rapper. But he's awesome. His name is Waze Crankfield. He does horror themed hip hop music. He has fangs and everything. He has like the vampire fangs and everything else. He's it's wild. And he's actually releasing a free mixtape tomorrow for everybody to download.
Yeah, I'm friends with a band, geek band down in Florida called Sci-Fied.
Okay.
And they kind of rivals with a sci-fi based hip hop artist that does it.
Right.
And it's like we can't do that because he just did it because he could put out albums left and right. And it's like,
I was gonna say another great con I went to this year. I've totally forgot about this one, but really not to go back off topic again. But it's on topic because of what I'm about to say.
But there
was a great con in Charlotte, North Carolina called the Mad Monster Party that happens every year, and I mean it's great.
It rings a bell.
Yeah, there's several of them all over the world. There's one in like Phoenix. I think there's one in Chicago. I think there's a couple. There's a few different ones that happen. Yeah, but the Mad Monster Party in Charlotte, great, great festival or whatever. And we're talking about, theme bands or whatever. Yeah. They actually have a band down there that are called AC Deceased. They're a zombie AC/DC tribute band. It's wild. Yeah, that's all they play at the after party.
See, that's what gets my goat.
Yeah, AC kind of Deceased.
To go back to that aspect, to kind of mix two topics together, it's... What gets my goat for some people that go to a show like that or a drag, it's to me it's more of a party con than anything else. And it's Dragon Con.
That's what Four State Slasher Con is. We are a horror fan. We want to appeal to all horror fans. It's a big party, basically.
I'm not knocking the party. It's gotten so much of a, like Dragon Con, we covered this as a show standpoint on our first official episode. But it's gotten so aspect of a party aspect,
right?
That the con itself, which kind of what you're trying to do, is door kind of set off to the side. Dragon Con is like your con; it's similar, meaning it has bands, it has a con aspect,
right?
But a lot of fans, it's like, hey, you're going to see the bands that are going to be showing up. No, I'm just going to stay in the hotel and party.
Yeah, so
I'm like, really, you're paying, even though you're paying admission, you're not going to show up and enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own, I guess. I mean, even my friends I know that party during the con, they still go to the con. They still actually go enjoy the con. Maybe get some autographs or get something or whatever.
Taking the music,
or watch a movie or two, things like that.
There's a lot
maybe,
of things.
Maybe it's like, oh man, there's a panel from one of my favorite movies. I get to listen to the actors talk about. That's really cool. I want to see that. We go see that. Yeah.
But just the sitting, I'm just going to sit in my room and just party and drink.
You can do that at home.
You're going to spend close to $2,000, $3,000 to get down there and possibly in and. All you're going to do is sit in a hotel room?
Yeah, if that's the case, you just sit at your house with DVDs and a 12-pack of beers and save you a whole lot of money.
I mentioned that to the person, and she's like, I just need to get away from my family and my husband. You could spend less than going to the Bahamas for 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. You could go anywhere to do that or whatever. You go.
But it's like if I was going to that, I think one year that she went, Sci-Fi was going to show up. And play there. It was a big thing for them at the time.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I'd be seeing them. I'd be hanging out with them because I know them.
Right.
And
that's a great aspect of a lot of these cons, especially smaller ones like the one I'm trying, like the one that we're doing, Four State Slasher. It's like a family reunion. You get to see everybody.
That's
what it is. It's just a fun. It's almost like a family. It's like your family outside of your family.
That's what a lot of. I guess those who don't go to shows don't really realize that those who go to a particular show, like as of this airing, Baltimore Comic Con is happening. It's those who go on a yearly basis. They see a lot of the same faces, a lot of the same friends, and it's again, like you said, seeing family year in, year out, and it's the only time they see them.
Exactly, it's the only time all year you see each other. Yeah.
And it's just you hang out. You tend to have fun after the show. You go to the show. You have fun. You hang out. Possibly make fun of other people at the show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then after the fact, you just taking the highlights of the city afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know there've been a couple times I went to Baltimore. I'm there at the show for me. get there about 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm there until, do the show until maybe about 2 o'clock. Leave, have lunch, dinner, and take in a ball game.
Take in a ball game or whatever.
And you're there for the day.
Exactly.
Have fun. And what that seems to escape a lot of fangoers, that you're there. Have fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you want to call it, or?
I mean, it's up to you, man.
We could call it right now. It's maybe about, we've been here a good hour and 20. We'll call it right now. It was nice having you on the show.
Oh, Matt. Absolutely. Anytime, Chris.
Again,
I had a lot of fun. It was great.
Four State /Con, again, it's going to be October 16th and 17th. I'll post the links, Facebook, and you guys have a webpage, too?
We do. Four State /Con, all one word, no space, no dash, nothing.
It's
fourstateslashercon.com.
Okay. All that's going to be in the description for the show. It'll be posted on Monday.
Awesome. I'll send you the link, and we'll promote on our sites as well. So.
If you want to walk out, it's fine.
Okay. Are you just going to do
it? Yeah, I'm just going to do a little after. I'm a little brief for the fans. I'm going to do a brief review before we go off, because I picked up the Taken King this past week. Again, drive safe, Matt.
Take care, bud. Going to Winchester to grass promote, hand out some flyers.
Yeah. We wish you the best of luck for the show and everything else. And
you too, Chris.
Thank you. Take care,
and we'll see you there.
See you there.
We'll see you there.
Matt has left us, we thank him for being on the show. I know we said last week that Alex was going to be here. He has a couple things come up. But I did want to give you guys my review for The Taken King, The Destiny Year 2. Speak to you guys about that before I go. As some of you, as fans, might realize, again, Destiny, I hate it with a passion. But with this Year 2 stuff, The Taken King, there's a lot of stuff that they fixed with Year 1. When Destiny first came out, they had things called bounties. You'd go to the tower and do bounties and, kill 30 enemies with melee, so forth and so on. And you'd have to go back to the tower to redeem those. You don't have to do that now. A lot of the stuff is streamlined, feels better, looks better. And as we said prior, Peter Dinklage is no longer the Ghost. Now it's, he goes by the name I don't want to say Peter North, but let me pull up IMDb. But where Peter Dinklage, his voice off acting for the Ghost seemed a little sarcastic. The new guy that they brought in, a lot of the people I've been speaking to have been referring to Dinklage, Peter Dinklage's King. They've been referring to his ghost as Dinklebot, and they've been referring to the new ghost as Northbot. You've heard fucking ads. The thing with Peter Dinklage is I'm currently pulling up the let's see here. This is where it's going to slowly down a little bit. Storyline. Nolan North is the new voice for the your ghost in the game. It's two different. Where there's a scene part in Destiny in the earlier missions before you get into the Taken King, where the line for the from the ghost, your ghost, is they're coming out of the wall. They're in the walls. Peter Dinklage, his is more like, oh shit, they're fucking coming out of the walls. It's like a shock and a surprise. Where Nolan's ghost is more like they're coming out. It's more of a scared type deal. Wish Alex was here to mirror this. Hopefully I'll get him into the show and we'll cover this and more about video games. I just wanted to get the review out. I'd say the game, but there are still a lot of annoyances in the game to introduce a lot of the new weapons. They nerfed a lot of the older stuff to bring a lot of the new stuff in, and it just doesn't feel right as gameplay. Again, there's no balance in it. As much as you go higher level wise, where like this, again, you've heard it in our first episode, I really love Borderlands, where if you're in an area where the people, the enemy, the creatures or the people in Borderlands, you're might be a level 40, they're still level 2, they pretty much one hit kill. In Destiny, the lower level characters are still required like 15-20 hits to bring down. It seems like Bungie and Activision are being Bungie and Activision. Their rate, a lot of it's still very hard to get the exotic weapons. What they should have repaired was being able to put more exotics in your slots, meaning having more than, you're still limited to one exotic armor in your armor classes and one exotic weapon in your weapons classes. The armor classes are helmet, chest armor, leg armor, and armor. In your out of all those that four, I'm not including the new relic and class and the new the capes. You're only allowed one exotic to put in the basic body armor type deal. You can't cover yourself head to toe in exotic armor, which would be extremely nice. Still not happening. Same thing with the guns. You have primary, secondary, and a heavy. You're only allowed one exotic weapon to use over those three, which means if you have three, a great exotic heavy, a great exotic secondary, and a great exotic primary, you're only allowed to choose one of those to use, period. Still no trading, which would have loved to see, especially with some of the friends I play with on Destiny, if they got an extra exotic that they didn't need, which would have meant I could have gotten an exotic or a legendary. That's not there. What I was happy to see is that one of the great improvements of the game that I've seen was the leveling system. They capped it at 40 instead of 20, and they revamped the light system a little bit, which is good. You don't have to struggle with upgrading the light to increase your base level. But the light is still a factor, and I've been hearing a lot of reports that it's still light based. Still not exactly sure how light affects the game, your character at all. Just that it seems a little bit still confusing. The Taken enemies are some of the Taken enemies are annoying as fuck. They've taken out the annoying wolf aspect in the game for the wolf DLC that they had. Playing as a low level character, trying to get through some areas and try to level up, were annoying with the wolf drops and the wolf gangs coming in, and because they were, if you were a level 5 or 10 and you're in a level where the enemies that you're normally fighting are about the same level as you, again the wolves will come in at a level 34 or 35, one hit kill you and it would piss you off, and or you couldn't get past that area because of those wolves. So there have been improvements. If my original rating of this game was maybe a 4 out of 5, I'll say now it might be closer to 6, because the game now, The Taken King, is $40 for it. Yeah, it's probably worth $40, but a lot of you, the people, you the listeners out there, see it on the stores. You see the $60 version, the legendary version. If you have Destiny, just go into the game itself and purchase the Taken King that way, because the only thing the legendary editions are good for is that if you haven't played the game at all or don't have the game, it gives you everything for the $60. There's also an $80 version, which only gives you that version has a couple extra shading for your armor and one or two extra weapons. Don't waste your money on that. Don't. It's a bad idea, but it's still, there are a lot of downloads. The game itself requires several, maybe about 10 to 15 gigs on the hard drive itself for all the updates, all the downloads, and everything else. Plus, it's still, no matter what, an online game. Meaning, this game has to be played online. You can't play the main story offline. Not to mention, a lot of times, again, I wish Alex was here to give the website, you would need more than one player to get through a section, even in regular game or with Taken King. You would need either higher grade equipment or more players to play with you, and you still have that 3 people max, which is stupid. So, and Alex was telling me that there's a website that he could go to and to have people come in and help you play the game or a raid. So we'll see. Again, I'll try to get Alex in here to discuss Taken King. He's a PS4 fanatic. I won't say fanatic, but he primarily games on both a PC and a Sony machine, whereas I'm a 360 person. So we'll try to get him on that. I'll say that's it for about now. If you've been listening to us through Twitter, playing through there, we do have a website. It is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. If you're listening to us through our website, Stitcher, or Twitter, or iTunes, we do have a Twitter. You can always contact us there. It is Long Coat Mafia. Our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. And we try to update our Instagram. It's the same as our Twitter, Long Coat Mafia. Please, if you like us or you disagree with us, please let us know. If we get a whole crap ton of email, we will create a special episode dedicated to the mail that comes in. So again, we're signing off. I'd like to thank Matt for being on the show for a better part of this episode, talking about Four State. Everything from the links to our stuff for the show are going to be in the description. The stuff for Four State is going to be on that show, on same spot. So, Goombas, have a good day. Hope you enjoyed the show.